Hi, I'm Greg Schaefer, and welcome to the Virtual CISO Moment. Paul Valente joins us today. He is the CEO and co-founder of Viso Trust. He's also former CISO of Restoration Hardware, Lending Club, and ASAPP. Paul, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Really delighted to be here with you, Greg.
We'd love to start out hearing, well, I'm very interested to hear about Viso Trust and what it is you offer, but I want to hear about your background, how you got started into cyber and IT, and eventually what led you to start that company and what you were trying to solve by starting that company. So start at the beginning.
Well, thank you, Greg. I got into technology really as a young age, serendipitously, when I was hired by my parents' family businesses to computerize their businesses. So This was back in the 80s, and that just kind of became the default for what I was going to do with my life. So I went from there to, you know, building websites and networks for companies, and soon I was working in the public sector. So I spent some time working for city government, also some time teaching technology and security at the college level. And then since then, you know, switched in the early 2000s to the private sector, and spent the majority of my career, as you mentioned earlier, leading and building security teams. Spent a lot of time in financial services and spent decades on both sides of third-party cyber risk management. Yeah, so that's really what kind of brought me into to technology. Yeah.
So I pinged a little bit on the government thing. I'm a former CISO I was the first CISO for Metropolitan Government of Nashville and Davidson County. This is about, I don't know, 13, 14 years ago. Curious what your thoughts are as far as the commonalities and the differences between working in government and then working outside of government for the private sector.
Yeah. You know, I really enjoyed my time working for the city government of San Rafael. It was an incredible learning experience for me. I got to work on really every type of system, and really got to help a lot of people. You know, as I did that job, you know, working with different areas of the government, really was rewarding. You know, working on putting the first computers in patrol cars, working on police and fire dispatch, supporting the crime computers, administering firewalls for the government, helping some of their early customer facing services launch. Really powerful. Also, where I started, you know, getting my feet wet and my hands dirty with security as well, because essentially everything that we did impacted security somehow. And that's really a big part of what got me into security, why it became my specialty, you know, ultimately.
Well, I'm glad that you talked a little bit about the public service there, as far as the government service and basically being able to, I'm going to paraphrase, I don't think that you said it exactly, but to make a difference. That was a big part of that at that point in time, right? And the reason why I bring this up is there was a LinkedIn recently. I responded to a poll where, like, four things that you look for when you go to the next job, you know, remote work-life balance, salary. I don't remember what the fourth was, but making a difference wasn't one of them. And so I'm glad that you touched on that, in that sometimes the public sector, the government entities, they get a little bit of a bad rap for not paying enough, but you can sometimes get a lot more out of it than just what your paycheck is. So all of that—
That's really true. That's really true.
Now, all of that led you to eventually stop being a CISO and be the founder for Viso Trust. If I read correctly, that was about, 4 years ago?
That's right. So that's right. So third-party cyber risk management, that's what Viso Trust is focused on, essentially bringing AI to third-party cyber risk management. And, you know, back in 2016, my co-founder and I were building the third-party security program back at Lending Club. And we tried really everything that there was out there. We built, and time and again as a CISO, I built questionnaire-based processes that turned out to be labor-intensive and slow. They caused delays for procurement. They gave us very poor quality data.
And say because it's like that's just a speed bump to making the deal close.
That's right. That's right. They characterized our team as the Department of No. They ultimately hurt the culture of security in the company, and really failed to reduce risk. Right. And so back in 2016, my co-founder envisioned allowing companies to assess third parties instantly using AI-based techniques, using artifacts of the security program that already exist. And we patented that approach, a unique approach that we call artifact intelligence. And since then, we've trained on data from over 2.4 million companies. And at this point, we are relied on by some of the largest and most most mature TPRM programs in the world, including large banks, financial institutions, manufacturing, really every industry vertical. So, and you talked about making a difference, and that's really what it meant for us. You know, for our customers, they've been able to transform from the Department of No to the model for innovation and efficiency to which other teams aspire. So, seeing assessments that, prior to VisoTrust took maybe 30, 60, 90 days or more to complete, seeing those complete in just a couple of days, right? And doing so while capturing more than 10 times the risky relationships with much higher quality data than they ever could before. So 95% less work, while reducing risk by as much as 95% as well from third parties.
Okay. Well, it sounds great. I want to probably dive in a little bit more to VisoTrust in just a moment, but I'm going to ask you first, after a quick break, what you feel is the most significant threat cyber information security-wise for small and mid-sized businesses. I got a sneaking suspicion that might have something to do with third-party risk, but I could be wrong. So we'll come back in about 30 seconds for that.
The virtual CISO moment is brought to you by vCISO Services, a leading provider of quality and experienced virtual chief information security officers for small and mid-sized businesses. Check them out at vcisoservices.com.
I lied. That was the shorter one. That was 17 seconds. So what would you say is like one of the most significant threats now, information security wise for small and mid-sized businesses?
Yeah. So as you're building a security program, there's going to be three kind of top overarching threats that you're going to be saddled with addressing, right? Now, of course, third party is at the top of the list. Today, companies are approaching 100% of their technology being owned by third parties. And whenever you share sensitive data or access, that brings risk. But I think it's also important to understand that social engineering at large, things that bring like phishing attacks and anything that can convince your employees or the employees of your third and fourth parties in sharing their credentials unknowingly or allowing access or information that will allow folks to gain access is a huge issue, right? In many cases, this leads to ransomware and other prominent attacks that we see affecting small businesses every day. And then the third one is application security. So this is going to, broadly impact, companies differently. But if you're perhaps at a startup, at a software company, building insecure code and making sure that your applications that you build are secure is really, really important. So those are really the top three risks. And it's a challenge, when you're early and you have limited resources to absolve those risks.
I agree with all three, and I definitely want to ping some on more on third-party risk, because that is one that I think is probably the least understood, or maybe it's understood, but only like at a high level. It's like you have a startup or a small business, like, yeah, I understand there's risk there and so on and so forth. No, you really don't. You don't understand the risk as far as the cyber and the information security goes. So I think, and you touched on this, one of the big issues we've had with regards to third-party risk is never having a standardized methodology for folks like me to adequately assess a risk. You touched on questionnaires. Everybody has their own questionnaires. And they ask different things, and they're a pain to do. They're a pain to ingest. And a lot of times, honestly, sometimes organizations will just send out the questionnaire and they don't even care what the answers are, so long as you've checked yes. They won't even read it or anything like that, which is horrible. I mean, do you have multi-factor authentication? You check the box, yes. The evaluator says they're good, but you realize, well, you didn't really ask if I had it everywhere.
Right.
So I understand the need for something like this, but let's just say, for example, we're going to play role-playing here. I'm CEO of Company X, and my virtual CISO says, you know what, your third-party risks program isn't all that great, but I've got someone I want you to talk to and explain why that VISO, what VISO can do from a business perspective. You've got like a minute or so of the CEO's time. How do you sell it to them?
Yeah. So assess any company accurately in 5 minutes. That's essentially what we give you the ability to do. Now that, you know, you now multiply that across your third parties and you have a full-blown program that where you have a complete bird's eye view and control of your third-party risk. Right. Now there's a lot more that the platform does than just that. But delivering
that gets your foot in the door.
Yep. Delivering you that accurate data to make good business decisions early on in the procurement cycle is so critical. Right. A lot of companies, as you detailed, this can be a very painful, slow process. Right. And in the end, come up with very little actionable data. Right. There's salespeople filling these questionnaires out saying, like, hey, boss, what do I need to say to get the deal here? Right. And so that's why assessing companies based on artifacts is so much more valuable. Right. And yeah.
Oh, well, I'm glad that you said artifacts, because the next thing I was going to follow up on, this is more the security person in me, is that I always advise folks when they fill out these questionnaires, fill it out to your company's benefit, but it has to be defensible. So I was going to ask you, how do you defend your results? Now you're talking about using artifacts. Explain that a little bit more, please.
Yeah. So there's hundreds of different artifacts, types of artifacts on the platform at this point, drawn from a variety of different sources, public and private. Mm-hmm. But the most valuable ones come directly from the third parties. And they're things that you're going to be very familiar with. So every type of trust report, so every type of SOC report, every type of ISO report, every type of PCI or BSI or C5, there's a myriad of them, and we support standards and audit types from all over the world. Mm-hmm. And so those are highly valuable on the platform. For less mature companies, you're going to see security policies and standards, security overview, sales documentation. You might see pre-filled trust questionnaires that they've filled out for other customers. And we also collect things like pen tests and other more technical artifacts. The platform has a concept of third-party audited assurance, or fourth-party audited assurance, if you will. We expect that companies, as they develop and as their security program develops and they have more sophisticated leadership, let's say they have a CISO, they're probably going to be engaged in various trust building activities in order to not only build their trust profile for their customers, but also so that the leadership and the management, and the CISO, for instance, can gain visibility and comfort around their own security practices. And so our platform leverages those various artifacts in order to derive assurance. So let's say somebody says that they have multi-factor authentication everywhere, you know, taking mm-hmm. your example, right? Now, if this is the first time they've documented it in response to a question that you've asked them, how likely is that? Is it that this really is widely deployed across their organization, right?
Yeah.
Those that have built a security program know that if you haven't produced any evidence, you probably haven't developed your program very much.
That's a good point.
And so while our platform can ingest questionnaire information in addition to all these other types of information, it's going to levy assurance with regard to control coverage based on these types of artifacts and their quality. So that has two benefits. One, obviously, the higher quality data, much more meaningful results. At the same time, though, for vendors, all they have to do is take 5 to 10 minutes to upload artifacts, right? There's no answering 300 questionnaires or 300 questionnaires or anything like that, or having to triage information internally and wrangle data. So that speed, that therefore equates to speed, right? Getting results quickly. And, you know, harkening back to your CISO experience, Greg, you can probably relate to when you deliver, let's say, negative results about a vendor, you know, 6 months into a relationship for a really important, what's going to be a critical business initiative.
That's bad.
It's bad. Yeah. Right. You need that information up front when you're doing RFPs and when you can actually see your business owners say, oh, wow, I'm going to choose a different vendor because the security is not that good on this one. Right.
And that's a great point, because we in the security, the CISO arena, we're constantly saying to business units, it's like, get us in on the forefront, because bolting on security afterwards is really tough. But if we can't deliver, then it's like, okay, we've got this opportunity. You've got a week or 3 days
right.
or one day to let us know whether or not it's secure or not. And we're going to come back and say, you know, it's going to take a little bit longer than that. It's like, I can look at their SOC report, no exceptions, but then that becomes what? A just check the box thing again.
Right.
So, but what about the output? So different companies are going to have different needs. So I'm a healthcare company, and I've established a BAA with your company, not Viso Trust, but your company B now. Okay. I'm company A.
Yep.
So we have a BAA in place, but I need to have more assurance that you're actually meeting the security spirit of HIPAA. You may not be high trust certified, but I want to know that you're HIPAA compliant. Are your outputs in such a way that it can be tailored towards the need of the company doing the due diligence?
Absolutely. So I think you make a really, really important point. You know, third-party security is not one size fits all. And I think we've all, you know, dreamed of, you know, the super framework that can be applied, you know, to every vendor once, and
please,
then everyone is going to rely on that, right? We've all dreamed of that.
Not another framework, though. It's
exactly. It's just resulted in more frameworks,
right?
Because folks have different needs, right? And for platforms that were focused on this approach, we found that they've never given us more than 10 to 20% coverage of our population. So we're back doing manual assessments on the other 90 or 80%, right? And so the exchange model has never worked. And so while our platform uses AI to have very, very dramatic economies of scale and train models and be able to evaluate very, very quickly any vendor, whether we've seen them before or not, we recognize this difference between different relationships. And so when you create a relationship on the platform, it only takes about 90 seconds to do so. You essentially pick a company from a directory of over 2.5 million. And you, in a very, very short process, you model the unique business relationship that you're going to have with them. It's actually only like a couple of clicks, but in the background, the system models over 8,000 different data points to uniquely determine the access level and the attack surface of this relationship. Mm-hmm. It also essentially collects from you information about the data that might be in scope or could be impacted by this relationship. And that's all used to model inherent risk in a way that's completely unique for every client's relationship with a particular vendor. Because you may have a different risk tolerance, right, than another vendor. You may be in another client. You may be at a different spot in your maturity life cycle, right, where your tolerance is different. There's a variety of different reasons where tolerance may differ. Mm-hmm. And so our assessments are completely bespoke to the particular client vendor relationship. And specifically to HIPAA, you know, and many other privacy frameworks like GDPR, CCPA, UK GDPR, etc. Actually, earlier this year, we released a privacy module that covers these additional privacy mm-hmm. aspects. We've always covered data security and also as it relates to privacy, but we've extended the platform for to look at BAAs and to look at privacy policies, all with artifact intelligence, and a myriad of other artifacts to discern the privacy posture as well, specifically with regard to various compliance frameworks, such as HIPAA.
Of course, AI, artificial intelligence, for those who don't know what AI stands for, like maybe there's one or two of you out there. It's really gained a lot of traction the last, you know, we love acronyms in IT, don't we? So it's really gained a lot of traction in the last year with the advent of generative AI, ChatGPT, the leading chatbot and all of that. And so it's become more top of mind to folks. In fact, our firm, we script different scenarios each year for our tabletop business continuity exercises. This year was based on generative AI. The reason why it's top of mind for me is that literally about an hour ago, I just finished up a tabletop on generative AI for a client. Now, one of the questions that we ask our clients when about their generative AI use is that, do you verify the information? Because obviously verifying that what comes out is important. I'm sure that you have quality control and all that in place to verify the information, but how do you convey to your potential partners and clients that the information is valid? How do you test that?
Yeah, that's really important. I think you make a super important point. And we're not at a point in history just yet where we should be completely bypassing humans. And especially where accuracy is really, really important. And if there's anything, you know, that is valuable to our company and to our customers, it's that we and they can completely stand behind the assessments that we produce as 100% accurate. And that actually is a tremendous enabler for security teams. You know, you may recall from, you know, assessing vendors and using questionnaires, the last thing that you want is, you know, to be in the boardroom with the risk committee, you know, kind of raking some technology leader over the coals for working with a risky vendor. And then they're able to refute, you know, the data that you got because they got something more reliable directly from the CTO of that company or the CISO of that company that whoever filled out the questionnaire for you, you know, got wrong. Right. Mm-hmm. So assessments are not only the fastest and most comprehensive, but by far the most accurate in the industry. And we do that we assure that accuracy in a number of ways. So the first one is that we do take a human in the loop approach to AI. Every assessment that you get from us has eyes on it by a qualified third party auditor. Our third party auditors have participated in hundreds, in some cases, thousands of third party assessments. They've all participated in SOC 2 Type 2 audits. They're all ISO 27001 lead implementers or above. They're highly qualified, highly trained. Mm-hmm. Additionally, we continuously measure everything we do, you know, from an AI standpoint. And I think it's important to note that that the view of the auditors is incredibly important for us. They are how we train our models, right? So they annotate data. We are essentially in the business of the automated interpretation of security and control related language, and they are a critical part of training our models. So, mm-hmm. So that's one key way. The next is really through the transparency of the platform. So anybody can go to VisoTrust today and register, sign up for a free account, kick off a certain number of assessments. And you'll be able to see that when you look at what we call the risk analysis, and you see the determinations of control coverage and the assurance associated with those, you can click in, you can see directly all the extracted language that was used to determine the presence of various controls. And you can, in a single click, you can pull up the artifact and you'll see the information highlighted within that artifact directly where that information was drawn. So it's highly transparent, right? It's easy for our customers to answer questions that they may have and to should they desire to validate anything directly to do so. Right.
And that's the whole defensibility point where it's like, here's the answer, here's how it was derived. And I think that's perfect. And because that's going to be asked sometimes, I'm sure.
You bet. You know, everybody checks that, you know, when they're first working with our platform for sure. And it's something that makes its way all the way to the CISO. I mean, I think the probably one of the things that I hated most as a CISO is really the haphazard nature of this entire process and really not being able to provide defensible data to the business, right, with regard to our conclusions. And so it was really, really key to us to deliver that value and eliminate that problem, which we're really, really delighted to continually hear that that's what we've done for our customers.
That's awesome. That's a great service and certainly something that I'm going to want to look into a little bit more because I have felt that pain, as you said. It's like as a CISO and actually as a virtual CISO, it's just almost the same thing. But everything in security, cyber information security, can be stressful. And certainly creating a business, running a business, growing a business has its own stresses in itself. And as I said before we started recording, talking about the what I feel is an issue in our industry of burnout, some mental health problems, just from caused mainly by stress. And I encourage folks to get away in a healthy manner, do something that helps you deal with the stress. What's one thing that you do to get away from it all? Eat a Snickers bar?
I'm doing my best to limit that, but I certainly have a sweet tooth. I love grabbing a great dessert every now and then. But there's two things. One, you know, of course, I've been blessed to have a wonderful wife and family. I've got three boys. That can be a mixed blessing, but in any case, that's a lot of fun, and that gives me a lot of chance to exercise and a lot of chance to of course do everything I can to enrich their lives, which is wonderful. The next thing is that I like to play music, so I practice the guitar. I have for many years, and that's another thing for me. But yeah, getting outside or playing music, those are things that I really, really enjoy.
You know, I have I've turned back to music a bit. Back in many years ago, I self-taught myself acoustic guitar, did a little bit of keyboard, did a little bit of songwriting. This is when I first moved down to Tennessee and enjoyed the creative process, but more or less enjoyed understanding how songs were constructed, just basic chord structures, you know, and all of that, not getting into any sort of deep music theory. And then I kind of put it away for a while, but in the last like 2 months, really started to dive back into it again. And part of the reason is that as we get older, we find that sometimes things don't work as well as they used to, and you want to try to keep them working as much as possible. You know, the old saying, you don't use it, you use it.
Use it or lose it, right?
Yeah. So part of that was I was thinking just in general, I don't have any problems with my fingers or anything, a little bit of circulatory problem with Raynaud's, I think it's pronounced. But other than that, I mean, my hands are fine, but I want to keep them that way. And so I thought, well, maybe the dexterity of like playing will help. And it does. And I'm also finding that I'm taking a more intentional approach to it. Back then, I think I wanted to like learn to do open mic nights and impress girls. And I did open, I got 50% of that. So now it's a different intentionality and learning about it, but it does help. I've got an old being early 90s, 93 or so, Fender Stratocaster, whatever the the entry the Squire with the Squire amp and all that. So back in the day, it might have cost $99. I just saw a 93 on eBay for like $700. I'm like, really?
Wow! But some nice appreciation.
But it's fun. I find that the electric is a little bit easier for me to learn bar chords, so I can maneuver my fingers a little bit more as opposed to like pressing down on the acoustic. Well, I went too far into my area there. It's like I won't go any further. But what are your future plans? It could be with Viso Trust, or are you going to put out an album of greatest hits, or what?
That's pretty funny. You know, I'm pretty far from putting out an album of greatest hits. I am trying to. There's a couple tunes I'm trying to master. I'll probably be doing those open mics, trying to get that same 50% for you know, as you, as well here. So I do have some goals there. But yeah, of course, very, very focused on Viso. The company has been growing very, very quickly. So customers like Instacart, Gusto, Upwork, Cruise Automation, all been very, very successful on the platform and more every day. And so we're just continually focused on pumping out value. I mean, we released the Nth Party Network and Fourth Party Risk earlier this year. AI Trust recently came out as well, to a point that you were making earlier, which is so poignant right now. And also we released the trust side, so helping vendors deal with questionnaires that they may get from and completely automating that process, so filling those automatically. So we're just focused on delivering value and solving this problem for our customers. And there's just a really exciting roadmap ahead. Yeah.
I love the focus on service. So what's the website if they want to find out more information about VisoTrust?
www.visotrust.ai. Yeah.
That's easy.
Come register and kick off an assessment.
I might have to do that myself too. I purposely, whenever I do these talks, I purposely try to stay away from learning about the product, because I want to start asking questions as if I don't know, because that's where you can really dig in. So as a former professor of mine said in my master's program, the what is fine, but I want you to tell me the so what. Why is it important? And I think we got the so what out of this, at least to the point where I am definitely interested in looking into it more myself. Paul, thank you so much for joining today. It was a wonderful conversation. We should collaborate on a song sometime.
Sounds great. I'd love to do that. Thank you so much for having me on the show, Greg, and thanks to all your listeners.
And everybody, stay secure.